This is the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy, 2021, episode 22. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. Man, you've heard a lot of myself, Travis Justice, and Dr. Rob in the last week. Of course, a week ago, we're sitting in this chair not knowing what was going to happen with the Nebraska coaching staff. And then, in the middle of the week, all hell breaks loose. Scott Frost gets a lifeline thrown to him, and, well, four others get sent out to pasture to help save his job. And we went live on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter for about an hour, had a great conversation, good interaction with everybody. And now we're back in the saddle again after Nebraska did not play over the weekend. Hey, just real quick before we get started, a quick reminder that if you can give this podcast a like, if you can give it a thumbs up or wherever you listen to this podcast, that would help us out. If you have the time to give us a written review, that also helps people find us because, you know, this is like a community and we want the community to grow and spread. And, it's a lot of fun. And back in the studio with me is he brought beer this morning. We're recording at 10:30 in the morning and Dr. Rob Zadiska brings beer. This is good stuff, man.
Do you like that?
I do. I like it a lot. It's like peach cobbler.
Yeah, Jeff says we were gonna like this one. So our good buddy Jeff Hardy at Cross Strain, who basically signed up for like a 3-week sponsorship, basically as the beer supplier,
which is just supplying beer, right?
Basically, yeah. Which is you know what we don't have high standards when it comes to certain tough forms of compensation.
No, we don't.
If you're gonna bring beer, we're gonna do it. So, so this would be Cross Strain's. It's Muscle Peach. So it's a fruited sour. I got a tangent here because my cousin Matt in Ohio, the Buckeye grad who loves the Huskers, he's gonna give us crap about drinking a fruited sour on air. But he's also a guy who. He makes shandies during the summer with Bud Light. So he's got like, he doesn't have a leg to stand on here. So anyway, I mean, it says it's a peach cobbler sour. So it's peach, cinnamon, vanilla, and lactose to, well, do the sour side of it. 7% alcohol by volume. And Jeff said he gave us one can and he goes, this is enough. And I'm like, what do you mean it's enough? He goes, dude, he goes, it's a butt kicker. He goes, plus you can almost like eat it. It's basically brunch in a can.
This is brunch in a can. And it's not even that sour. It is more like it's almost mimosa-like.
It even looks that way. I mean, it looks like you're drinking it looks like you're drinking an orange juice shandy is what it looks like, but it's peach. It's really good. It's a lot of alcohol in there.
Yeah, but 7%. We've gone higher than that before. I mean,
hell yeah.
Loose Morals was right around that 13% mark. And who knows, with all the vodka that we had in those Bloody Marys the week you passed out here in my basement, who knows how much alcohol content you had in there.
I took a nap.
You did take a nap. And I think you probably took a nap after Friday because your son is on to the state championship game for, what, the third year in a row?
Third year in a row, Westside's gone to the state title
game. And I saw you guys went to the casual pint where you must have really tied one down pretty good.
Well, we went there, had a couple before the game, had a few after the game. I don't think I'd slept much because then I was up late that night because I kind of – you're trying to relive the game. It was a great game between Westside and Bellevue West. In terms of the senior classes alone, I think there's 8 to 10 Division I football players were on the field that night.
That's crazy.
That's nuts for a high school football game. And I mean, if you think Nebraska's not churning out college talent, there is a ton of college kids coming out of this state right now.
What do you think that's from? Because there were some up points, some down points. I go back to when I was on Channel 3 and everything, and it didn't seem like it was producing. It was producing Division I athletes, but not high caliber.
And you kind of saw it over time. It tended to be kind of sports specific. Volleyball for years had churned out a bunch, but I think what happened is that over the years you've seen a rise of club sports and then the off season training programs. You look around Omaha, there's really a ton of these really really good very well run and very well coached. I mean, these kids are coached at a high level.
It's called a factory.
It is, in these off-season training programs. You've seen it in baseball for a while. You've seen it in volleyball for a while. I think there's been a big, big ramp up when you look at places like Warren Academy, look at Explosive Edge. I'm not trying to specifically advertise, but you've got some great programs with some really good people running them in Nebraska, where kids are getting amazing levels of both coaching as well as developmental training, strength, speed, et cetera. And it's filtering out into all sports. So you're seeing it football, volleyball, basketball, wrestling, baseball, track and field, where guys are all of a sudden getting the same level of development and coaching that they'd normally get only in really high population areas. I mean, for years you'd hear of stuff like IMG Academy down in Florida. Well, not everybody can
afford.
Yeah, can sell one of their Mercedes and send their kid to IMG for the summer. You've got that caliber of training here now. So it's no longer just the Florida kids, the California kids, the Texas kids who can train year-round. You're now seeing that at a high level. And you've got a lot of Nebraska guys that have come back. You got guys from other universities that have come back that are running these programs and coaching kids. So you're getting coached by guys who've played Division I football, who've played NFL football. And I think that's been a huge, huge part of it. And some of it's just, I think over time, we've kind of seen some of these schools put an emphasis on that themselves. I know with my kid at Westside, they train year-round. And it's all sports. It's not like they're training year-round just for football. They got a really, really great strength and conditioning training program at the high school. And it's probably akin now to more like what I would say like a medium university would be, a medium-sized university would have been like 20 or 30 years ago, the level of training that most high schools now have.
So did you send Ryan, and Ryan is your son, did you send him to any outside training, or did you have him just do it at the high school?
He did probably about 95% of it at the high school. Now, he and I have done a bunch ourselves. I'd like to think I know my way around a weight room a little bit. But I would say the vast majority at the high school, they got a strength coach, Craig Sikora at Westside, who he's one of these guys who gets phone calls from college coaches asking for advice on how to train kids in certain situations. The guy's a guru. We did some stuff, kind of football specific stuff, with Steve Warren. So Steve, former Husker.
Yep.
And Steve also does a ton of local fundraising for youth programs in the metro area. Just a stand-up guy, great leadership guy. But he runs Warren Academy, and it's from he does all sports, I'll say that. So he does the training for all sports. But obviously you've got a former NFL guy with a lot of local NFL connections. So your kids go there. My son's a D tackle getting coached by a former Green Bay Packer D tackle. It's not too shabby. And when you're looking for some technique drills and tips to get your kid, they do a great job. And like I said, it's at all these different places. It's so far above and beyond what I ever would have had when I was that same age. I'm perusing through bodybuilding magazines and going to the library and looking up nutritional guides at the public library back in 1987. It's a little bit of a different model now.
The way the model's set up, and I'm just asking you this, and I don't know if other people think about this or not, but it's just a random thought that came into my head, and that is, if you would have had this when you were in high school, how much better would you have been? And let's use a guy like Tommy Frazier. Let's use everybody that you played with.
So my brother and I, because my brother John also played college and pro football, he and I were talking about this. Now, at that time, he and I were probably so far ahead of the curve in terms of what we did. We were like I said, we were absolute nerds when it came to nutrition.
You're still
training,
a nerd,
all of that. Some things don't change. when you look at all of the stuff we were doing, I mean, this was literally over 30 years ago. Everything we were doing then, I mean, we were sitting on the cutting edge. I remember I hit the door down in Lincoln, and looked at what was going on in Lincoln at the time. Now, I understand I'd really tailored stuff just to myself. Boyd Epley's got to tailor it to 150 football players, volleyball players, basketball players, wrestlers, et cetera. So it gets a little more generic and not quite as customized per individual. And I had spent the last few years in high school doing everything on this incredibly individualized basis. And so the stuff that I think about my brother and I did in that era was pretty cutting edge for that time period. I mean, I arrived at Nebraska and I'm like, I'm just going to keep doing my own stuff because it's above and beyond what they're doing here right now. Now, I think that's changed and has amped up a thousandfold from that time. But you asked that question, and it's a good question, and it's a discussion I've had with my brother just because I looked at the two of us as outliers for that era. I mean, it was insane the amount of research-type effort we put into trying to figure out the best ways to do things back then for ourselves. Now you look at the way things are going. I think my brother and I would be maybe a little bit more into that. Yeah, they're good, but they're not the level of standout wouldn't be as great as it is now. It's not that we'd be even way farther ahead. I think the rest of that
curve, I think it all evens out, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think the rest of that, I think we would have done just fine. Don't get me wrong there. I think we still would have gone to Nebraska and each started 2 or 3 years like we did and everything would have been great. But I think the rest of that curve would have caught up with us. I think that the rest of the curve would have been way closer to where we're at. We would have sat a little bit closer to the middle of that athletic bell curve, just because everybody's getting some degree of training.
Yes, but what the training can improve and evolve, which it has, but what you can't duplicate or even make somebody do is the drive to do it.
It is. And, you know, I had a huge drive at that time period. The thing is, though, and I think you're seeing this across the board with these athletes, when you look at high school athletes now and you're seeing a state with a population the size of Nebraska, and you're seeing these D1 kids coming out of North Platte, Kearney, Grand Island, Lincoln, it's not just the Omaha Metro kids anymore. You're seeing all of these kids coming out. I think a lot of the where you're seeing this huge increase in these high-level athletes coming out of high school in all sports, I think a lot of that, when you talk about the motivation and drive, is now these kids see these resources available, they see what's possible, and I think that's creating a drive for a lot of these kids that wasn't there before. I think they see what's possible now, and that in and of itself serves as a motivation. And I think that's a big part, again, of why you're seeing so many college athletes coming out.
So the interesting part about what you're saying here right now is this. You know, when I think of back, you know, I started in Omaha Media in 1994, right? Even at that point, the state was producing probably more linemen, tight ends, your skill players. You know, you had Eric Crouch, you had Amon Green, but you didn't have
had the whole Omaha Central crowd.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at now is I think Omaha and the state of Nebraska is producing an incredible amount of skill players right now. I mean, high-level skill players. And when you have... What are you doing?
7-on-7, baby.
Okay, so but now when you've had 20 years of obscurity... to where you haven't been, you know, dominant, or you have a generation that didn't even remember Nebraska being good or competitive at a high level, should you say. You got to hold on to those players. And I hate to rub salt in the wound here yesterday. Did you see Keegan Johnson's play for Iowa yesterday?
Oh, my God. Well, I also still wonder why they don't throw the ball to him.
Like all the time?
Yeah.
I mean.
I'm not trying to come out here and be like, I'm Keegan's dad and my kid needs to get the ball.
Keegan has more drops than anybody.
Cluster say that. I'm just saying if I'm looking at Keegan, I'm looking at him going like, they just need to feed the ball to him 100% of the time.
Now, to be fair, Keegan has more drops than probably anybody on the Iowa football team this year. But
Babe Ruth had more strikeouts than anybody in history, too.
Cy Young had more losses than anybody, too. Yeah. I mean, I get it, but his touchdown yesterday was incredible. How do you keep those? So how do you go about keeping skill players at that high level? You had a kid from Westside to go to Oregon last year, right?
I mean, we did, yeah.
How do you keep them?
Yeah, out of
how do you keep them?
Yeah, well, so one thing is Nebraska's got to make that. You know, they occasionally talk a pretty good game about that locking down that 500-mile radius. There's a difference between talking that and actually doing it. And I don't know if they do that as much. I you know, like I said, this is all third-hand info by the time it gets to me. I think they looked at Keegan as a offerable kid, that he's somebody worth an offer, but he's not somebody they looked at and said, oh my gosh, this kid's going to be a star, this kid's going to be a playmaker, this kid's going to be somebody who can help us win games. They're like, well, he's pretty good. I don't know if he's somebody we need to offer, though. And I look at him, and I'm sitting here going, like, God, you're freaking crazy. Because I look at the, you know, just from Omaha Westside last year, where you had Avante Dickerson at Oregon. You got Kobe Bretz, who did go to Nebraska. Cade Haberman, who is now starting at Northern Illinois as a true freshman. And he's performing at a Division I starting D-tackle level at Northern Illinois. I understand it's the MAC conference, but this is also a team that knocked off Georgia Tech. They can play with Power 5 schools and hold their own for the most part most of the time. And then you had Cole Payton, who is up at North Dakota State. He's doing the redshirt thing where he's playing in four games, and when he goes in, he does Cole Payton stuff and scores touchdowns. So it's, you look at those four kids, and like I said, I mentioned these four because it's four Division I guys who it's four Division I guys that I have obvious intimate experience watching play. You know, two of them had offers from Nebraska. All four did not. And that was Kobe and that was Avante. Kobe's offer kind of came late in the game, but it was one of these things. He was a Nebraska kid, big fan, grew up a Nebraska fan. So for him, that was, I mean, it was a personal decision. Hey, if he's one of those kids, if you ask, hey, where do you want to go to school? I want to be a Cornhusker someday. Perfect. You got him. Avante, they offered, and it was a nice early offer, but when you look at some of the other schools that went after him, I don't know if the same level of effort was there. When you look at Cole Payton, you get a guy, and I think Nebraska, my understanding is, very, very late in the game, came in and did one of those like, ooh, maybe we should offer this kid. This is going to be a bad look if we don't get him, because he was arguably the best quarterback in the state the last couple of years, and I think he's going to have a very good college career up at North Dakota State. But by the time Nebraska came in, one, it's late in the game, and two, he's already looking at North Dakota State going, okay, here's a school that wins tons of games every year, goes to the playoffs every year, and oh, by the way, their last three quarterbacks have all been NFL draft picks, two of which were first-rounders. Maybe that's a little bit of a better fit. Nebraska's got to figure out a way to counter that, where a North Dakota State can come in and take a kid out of your backyard because they're better.
And you and I talked about this when there was a supposed resurgence when it comes to the walk-on program, right? At the end of the day, kids who want to play football don't want to walk on anymore. You'll get a handful, but if you can go up to North Dakota State, South Dakota State, Northern Iowa, and play, get a half ride, maybe even a full ride, because, you know, the South Dakota schools, hell, they charge in-state tuition for Nebraska and Iowa kids. And, well, and Mark Farley's talked to me about at Northern Iowa. He said, listen, I can't compete with that. Because I have to charge my pool of money, and I say he's saying my pool of money is less because South Dakota State gets to give a $12,000 full ride. Out of state for me is 30. I mean, there's a difference there.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference for those schools. But it's, you know, it goes even farther than that, because you look at a lot of these schools, there's some very good football getting played across the board at a lot of different levels. And if a kid wants to play college football, the opportunities are there for a ton of kids.
At any level, by the way. There's so much football out there.
And it's one of these things where that level of quality has gone up exponentially across the board. And a lot of it is the same kind of stuff we talked about earlier with the quality of the training programs that the kids have available now. The resources that they've got are so much better. But it's one of these deals that there's been a little bit of a spreading of that talent now, where all of a sudden you're seeing some of these NAIA schools are playing at a level that's pretty impressive, that they'd be a tough opponent for a small D1 school to have to take on. I mean, I'd take Morningside and a place like Grandview, for instance, and say, you know, they're not going to hang in there depth-wise very long with an Iowa. But it's one of those things where you've seen Northern Iowa, you've seen the Dakota schools come in and knock off some of these smaller schools. We're hitting the point now where a lot of these solid NAIA programs, like a Grandview, like a Morningside, are at a level that these 1AA schools, D2 schools are at, where they can hold their own. Was it a couple of years ago? I'm trying to remember all the ins and outs of it, but Iowa State and Drake needed to fill a hole on a schedule.
That was the last game of the year, and Drake went in and played Iowa State. It was a foggy, snowy game.
Horrible conditions, which definitely contributed to it.
But Drake is a non-scholarship Division I AA program.
Yeah.
Think about that. Nobody on the Drake football team is on scholarship. And they're in the Pioneer League, and
which it's like a Midwestern Ivy League kind of thing.
But they pushed Iowa State all the way to the limit.
Yeah, they've got on any given day, these schools have the capability to do some damage, and it's because there's a quality of athlete that's now kind of spread out there. So it's kind of cool to see that. So
I know a lot of you probably are wondering, okay, are you guys ever going to talk like Nebraska football? They do got a game coming up against Wisconsin. You had a lot of stuff happen over the weekend. And we will. But what we're going to do right now, we want to thank our sponsors, and that would be the Remington Trophy. If you haven't been to the Remington Trophy presentation, please do so. It is on January 15th, 2022, at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Just go to remingtontrophy.com. For ticket information and information regarding the event. Our good friend Scott Strunk over at Husker Hounds, 100% of Memorial Stadium is clothed by apparel from Husker Hounds. Okay, I might be making that up, but a lot of people who go to Memorial Stadium go to Husker Hounds, three locations in the Omaha area, and at Husker Hounds. .com. Husker Max for distributing this podcast. We thank them, David and Jove, who help out and put this out each and every week. And of course, our good buddy, Chad Carr over at Ticket Express, who joins us right now for another edition of Ticket Talk. Chad, did you enjoy the bye week as much as everybody else with all the chaos that was going on with the Husker coaching staff?
I did enjoy the bye week. It didn't have anything to do with the coaching changes, but I did enjoy the bye week.
That's good. You got a busy week coming up. Of course, we've been talking about football all season long, but basketball is now kicking into high gear, and the Creighton-Nebraska basketball game is on Tuesday at Pinnacle Bank Arena.
Yeah, and we have tickets available for that. Good seats in the lower bowl. One of the things people kind of forget that the season has already started because they have some not so sexy opponents, but it's always a big deal when the Jayhawks or the Blue Jays and the Huskers face off.
They're basketball Freudian slip right there.
Have the Jayhawks on the line.
Well, it's funny. You're like, what? Nebraska's playing Kansas? Wow. Okay. No, that would be a good game to watch as well. But so basketball is in full swing, and of course Nebraska is on the road at Camp Randall in Madison this weekend, and then it returns home for that Black Friday game against Iowa. So take people through the Madtown game, the Madison game, tickets for that, and also for the Black Friday game.
You know, basically we have tickets available for the road game in Madison if people want to go to that. As far as the Black Friday game, one of the things that people forget is that a lot of people are in town for the holidays, and then they, you know, basically will make some decisions as far as what they're going to do on Black Friday. whether it's going shopping or going to the game, and it's just a perfect opportunity to go down and see the Huskers. It's going to be Senior Day, and wishing some of those seniors the best on Senior Day.
You know, kind of circling back to the basketball thing, I mean, you mentioned the not-so-sexy opponents. Nebraska's got to be a little bit careful with that because
they get beat by non-sexy opponents.
We made those non-sexy opponents look pretty darn sexy. So does that affect stuff much going into that Creighton-Nebraska game as far as you see just from ticket sales or just a general interest?
It depends on the season. You know, a lot of the things with Nebraska basketball, you know, they play a lot of games, you know, during the week. And so it's definitely tough for people to make some of those games on the week. It's not like going down and seeing the Huskers, the Husker football team on a Saturday afternoon. And so it takes a little bit of planning ahead as far as being able to go down and see a Creighton, Nebraska game on Tuesday night.
I know Dan Plushay was at the CenturyLink Center this past weekend. Any good concerts, anything else coming up for stocking stuffers for the holidays? And speaking of the holidays, nothing says Christmas like a Ticket Express gift card, does it?
Absolutely. We would love to have the business on Ticket Express gift cards. We can definitely help you out with that. As far as good concerts that are coming up, you know, it's kind of all over the board. They just announced Greta Van Fleet at the CHI Health Center, so we have tickets available for that, as well as George Strait down Lincoln. Just a lot of cool things that are coming up down the pike. Greta Van Fleet would probably be the thing that was most recently announced.
You know, the interesting thing, Chad, is I'm going to be reaching out to you because my daughter, who lives in Memphis, called and said, "Dad, I have to go to Greta Van Fleet." And me being an idiot, I go, "Who the hell's Greta Van Fleet? I have no idea."
Dude, and I know who Greta Van Fleet is.
And I'm starting to realize this is a really big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the CHI Center is definitely a bigger venue for them. They typically haven't played those bigger venues, but yet at the same time, a lot of the things about like some of the newer artists or artists that have been around a couple of years is to see their progression of playing places like Sokol Auditorium, then take the jump to places like Stir Concert Cove, and eventually getting to the big time and playing like the CHI Center.
Excellent stuff. TicketExpress.com is where you want to find your tickets for all your ticket needs. Chad Carr has been with us for another edition of Ticket Talk. We'll talk to you next week, Chad.
Sounds good, guys.
I'm sure a lot of friends aren't going to let Chad live down the Jayhawk slip that he had right there, are they?
Well, I still think it's funny because he's got to work with Jessica, who's a huge Spartan fan, and yeah, that wasn't a fun game for us Spartan fans the week before.
and now I believe Michigan State has Ohio State coming up this weekend. Nebraska gets to play. Before we dive into some more of Scott Frost, before we dive into JoJo Doman, Nebraska, really, there's an opportunity here to play spoiler in the Big Ten West because up next is Wisconsin. And Wisconsin is currently in the driver's seat, tied with Iowa for the lead, but has the tiebreaker. So Nebraska can play spoiler there. And then it has Iowa the week after, where I hope they don't play spoiler. You do. but even though Nebraska will end with a losing record, Nebraska will not go to a bowl game, they can still rock the boat within the conference here right now.
They can. The Wisconsin game, God, Wisconsin seems like one of those teams that hit stride a little bit here. They have improved tremendously, especially on offense, as the season's gone along. I think Iowa is still a little bit of a question mark in my mind because I don't know. I'd almost have to ask you. I didn't watch the Iowa-Minnesota game. I watched Keegan's highlights because, well, they're freaking highlights, and it was awesome.
They are highlights.
Did Padilla play?
Padilla started yesterday. So okay. Here is the end. Because
yeah, so how did that go?
You know what? The numbers were about the same, right? It wasn't that the offense produced any more numbers. They had 277 yards of total offense. The difference was you have a guy that looks at different receivers. So before, Spencer Petras was pretty locked in on Sam Laporta and his tight end crew, right? Alex Padilla spreads the wealth a little bit more. Keegan Johnson and Arlen Bruce have become his primary receivers. But the difference is Spencer Petras is a pocket guy, doesn't feel comfortable outside the pocket. Alex Padilla now can make throws on the run. He's just a mobile in the pocket.
There's a little added dimension there.
And his release is noticeably quicker than Spencer Petras. Now, this is a coaching, even Tom Osborne question. Because Tom Osborne always said, you don't lose your starting position over an injury, right? Spencer Petras was injured against Wisconsin.
How much of an injury was it, or was that convenient excuse?
That's a very good question, because you have Illinois next week, where a lot of people think that Spencer Petras will return to the starting lineup for Iowa, which will drive a fan base crazy. Listen, I hosted a show last night for 3 hours. There wasn't one person who thought Spencer Petras should come back. He's 13-4 as a starter. Not one caller said he should come back as a starter. And everybody said that Iowa would not have beaten Minnesota if Alex Padilla would not have been a quarterback. So if you roll out a different starter against Illinois, you're going to have, you know, does the fan base boo? What happens there? But it goes back to a philosophical question of a head coach, because I remember Coach Osborne always saying, you don't lose your starting position if you're injured.
But at the same time, what if the other guy's better?
Amen.
Because sometimes it takes that injury and putting that guy into that situation to be able to see it. I don't disagree with Wally Pipp exists. I mean, there's a reason that whole term is there, that you got Wally Pipped. It's something, I know I'm going old school Yankees baseball, but... yeah, that's, if Wally Pipp never goes out, do we ever discover Lou Gehrig? Well, we probably do. I mean, he was good enough. At some point, you're going to look at it and go, okay, this Lou Gehrig guy, he's better. At some point, you've got to look at it and just say that, okay, Padilla is probably the better guy. You know, the whole starter thing, and the reason that came up so strongly with Osborne is because of the Brooke Berninger-Tommy Frazier thing. The kicker there is that in terms of productivity and ability to do things on the field, those two guys were so amazingly evenly matched. It's not like you looked at, okay, who's going to win the game for us? It was kind of a toss-up. Frazier's going to win that game. I still think Brooke wins that game for us. I mean Brooke can hand the ball to Tommy to Corey, rather, on a fullback slant trap just as well as Tommy could. Brooke doesn't have maybe the juke moves, but Brooke also had like a 1 to 2 tenths faster 40-yard dash time. Those guys were evenly matched, and so that's why Osborne was so hardcore about it. It didn't come down to Tommy starting in the Orange Bowl because you don't lose your starting job due to injury. Osborne sat down, and we had a series of full-on scrimmages the week and a half, 2 weeks before the Orange Bowl, and Osborne took the cumulative scrimmage grade between the two guys, and whoever had the higher scrimmage grade got the starting nod, and that was how Osborne was going to do it. That's what happened, and guess what? It worked. I mean, it worked out. Let me rephrase it. It worked out for us, but it was... Tommy had just this ever so slightly higher grade in the scrimmages that we ran than Brooke did. It wasn't at the end of the day, internally, it wasn't this, well, you lost the starting job due to injury, so now that you're back, you get the starting job back. I mean, that wouldn't have flown with the team. We needed to have something like, listen, you can't just say that because it doesn't matter. In our minds, that doesn't matter. You got to go with who's better. And the only remotely objective measurement we had was scrimmage grade. So even Osborne, I know he said that to the media. That's not how even he thought.
Okay, that's good, though.
It is. You got to base this on something objective. And so I don't buy into the whole... you don't lose your job due to an injury. If somebody's better, they're better.
That's why I like wrestling. Wrestle off, man.
Yeah.
Really? Mono, man.
Yeah.
Go
win. If you don't win the wrestle off, you're not out there. Exactly. It's hard to do a wrestle off. It's hard to do a scrimmage and be real objective. Sometimes in a sport like football, the dynamic of a game is far different than what it is in a practice or a scrimmage, and you don't know how somebody's going to perform until you put them in that game situation, which is why I understand the idea of, hey, he's got to earn this in practice to be able to play in the game. There's some guys, there's some positions that it just doesn't work that way until you get them in a game. And that's why I look at this and I'm like, yeah, if you got a guy who's maybe a little bit more mobile, maybe has a little bit of a better, quicker release, a guy who maybe has better, I'm not sure the phraseology, understanding the conceptualization of the offense, that he's able to spread the ball out more, that he knows where those different receivers are going to be at, and he doesn't have to lock in just on one wide out and then the tight end. He knows where all three wide outs and both tight ends are at and can make a decision based upon that. And that's, right now, that sounds like Padilla.
I you know what else it is? It's the little things. And I know people are like, you guys are spending way too much time talking about the Iowa Hawkeyes.
Well, it's relevant because we got to play them in a couple weeks.
And the difference is, for some reason, and I noticed it with Keegan, I noticed it with Arlen Bruce, I noticed with even the offensive linemen, there was just a different level of energy with Alex Padilla in the game as opposed to Spencer Petras. But Alex Padilla is a quarterback that does things a little bit different, and we're looking at it going, okay, is Kirk Ferentz going to like this, a type of guy that goes on the run and tries to throw a dart into double coverage when he try to make a play, as opposed to Spencer Petras?
Not the Ferentz style.
And that's what it is, and that's why Spencer Petras will either take a sack or he'll throw it away and just, you know, play the odds. It's a chess game with Kirk Ferentz. But that's where it'll be interesting to see what happens as we get closer to this game. Iowa has Illinois and Nebraska left. Nebraska has Wisconsin and Iowa left.
That Illinois game is going to be kind of interesting because guess who's playing some not horrible football
anymore?
Well,
because they're running the football so well. And Iowa couldn't stop Minnesota's run game yesterday. Take away the sacks, they have over 200 yards on the ground, but the sacks back that up to 189 yards. So Iowa, for some reason, can't stop the run lately. Nebraska's offense, this is what's funny about the coaching firings. Nebraska's offense was not broken as far as statistics go, but it couldn't finish it couldn't score. It couldn't get it done in the red zone, and it turns the ball over way too much. I mean, there were problems, but just statistically, as
just pure yardage, though, it was there.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, Texas Tech put up. I mean, you got some of these schools like Texas Tech and Houston with the air raid style of offense.
Did you see Texas Tech's finish yesterday?
Yeah, that was pretty impressive. That was nuts.
I've never seen a kicker that literally looked like a linebacker, and he had a cast on his hand, and he kicked a 62-yarder to win it.
Well, it was kind of, it was like Sebastian Janikowski.
And he wore 46.
Yeah, except he was a kicker instead of a punter, so.
But
there's situational statistics, and I mean, if you're chewing up yardage on first and second down, but you can't convert third down and you can't convert in the red zone, then something's wrong with your offense. I mean, you've got to be able to score those points. And that's, I mean, bottom line, done right there. Yeah. And right now, Nebraska's not able to do that.
So was it a good time with the week off? And if you missed any part of our coaches getting fired discussion, I put a link in the Podbean story here. You can also find it on Husker Max, but it's a good hour long conversation. Was it good to do this during a week off so guys can kind of grasp what happened and then get back to the drawing board on Monday?
I think it was, and wouldn't surprise me if that was part of the logic of this, because it sounds like kind of some of this kind of was stated, some of this is reading between the lines. It sounds like this decision was made, or at least was an option previous to it actually happening. I don't think it was one of these things that Trev and Scott sat down and a day and a half later, these assistants are fired. I don't think that happened. I think this was an option that was that was in discussion and being tossed around for at least a couple, 2-3 weeks here.
So what is the advantage
and the timing of it?
So what's the advantage of doing it with now or at the end of the season?
So if you would ask me, and I think we had talked about this on the podcast, if you'd ask me what was going to happen, they keep Scott, they clean house on the offense side of the ball, save Becton, just because I think he's a guy that's tremendously respected, and frankly, he's a good coach. He does a really good job. So I wasn't surprised it happened. I was one of the people who thought this was going to happen December, sometime in first week or two of December is when I thought this would happen. In hindsight, making the decision now, one, you hit the nail on the head, do it going into the bye week. You've got 2 weeks to kind of get taken some of these analysts and player personnel directors like Ron Brown and Frank Verducci and getting them up and running with the specific position groups.
I also think it helps in recruiting because you have assistant coaches that are out recruiting. If you continue to build those relationships with the early December signing period, now you let those recruits know, hey, these guys are gone. You don't, because if you do that at the end of the season, that fractures relationships.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is that if it's one of those deals, you get to that early signing date, you sign these kids, and then boom, these guys are gone. I mean, that is some serious fracturing of relationships right there. It's a big trust thing. You do it now, it allows you to tell the recruits, hey, listen, we trust you. We want you to trust us. We're going to do the right thing, but we're putting the ball back in your court. If you want to change your mind, if you want to back out of this, you've got the opportunity to do this knowing that one of the guys that's been recruiting you isn't here anymore. So it allows you to maintain some degree of trust with those recruits. The other thing is, from a timing standpoint, it's just a matter of you've got more time to deal with in terms of getting replacements in here. You can start talking to guys, sending out feelers, reaching out, and maybe starting to build some relationships with some of these potential replacements for these guys.
So a lot of people have been talking, you bring up the replacements with the pay cut that Scott Frost took, which is $1 million. That leaves you, you can use that $1 million and throw it back into an assistant coaching pool and let you go get what would be considered a higher caliber offensive group. The difference is, I mean, do you need to throw a lot of money at that right now, considering that it could be just a one-year deal? I mean, it literally...
Yeah, I think the smart thing is kind of like what they did when they cleaned house with Solich, with the assistants under Solich, and brought in Pelini and Barney Cotton and that crew of guys. I think you do 2-year contract with everybody. Otherwise, it's really hard to get guys to come in. You do a 2-year contract, you can tell these guys, listen, this may work, this may not, and everybody knows that. I mean, that's a known factor. Everybody knows it's not like you're going to come to Lincoln with this guarantee that you're going to be there for 5 years. This might be a 1-year deal. You got to do a 2-year contract, though, so these guys know. It's like, listen, I'm going to make a bunch of money 1 year. If this doesn't fly and Scott Frost gets fired, I've got an entire year's worth of solid salary. I can go back out and go hit the market again for a job.
So Scott Frost says he's going to give up play calling duties. It occupied way too much of his time. He needs to be the CEO. But here's a guy that likes to call plays, has called plays for a long time. What do you make of the idea of him giving up play calling duties?
I don't know if he was that great at it. I mean, I love Scott. I think there's some outstanding things he does as a coach. Frankly, the things I like about Scott are some of these kind of overall big picture things he does as more sort of a general CEO of a program. And that's the kind of thing where he came back in and he was trying to do some culture stuff. He was trying to some of the strength and conditioning implementation that he's done. That's the kind of stuff that I look at that I'm sitting here thinking he might be a better CEO than he thinks he is. I don't know if the play calling was a strength, especially with the players he had. And I think there's a little bit of maybe not seeing the forest for the trees. I mean, I look back to the Minnesota game last year where you've got this Minnesota team that's just completely decimated by COVID and injuries coming in down 24 players. That what was the statistic? They were giving up, their defense was giving up something like 7.3 or 7.4 yards per play on defense. That statistically says it's impossible for you to lose to them. If they're giving up 7.4 per play, there is no way they win a game. That is a statistical impossibility. And somehow Scott Frost found a way to lose to Minnesota because he didn't play to that statistic. He tried to run. He tried to implement this pseudo-funky Luke McCaffrey show, and it didn't work. He got too damn cute and outthought himself. If he had just lined up and just did, okay, you know what, we're going to hammer the line with a whole bunch of good but not great running backs, and we're going to do it for four quarters, and Minnesota's going to break, and we're going to win the game. And he didn't do that. And I'm sitting there going like, okay, dude, somebody needs to tell you your thought process when it comes to a play calling scenarios doesn't work. The next week, and I don't know if Scott handed it over to somebody, Lubick or otherwise, but the next game they played was that Rutgers game, and they went out and basically just kind of did a, okay, this is going to suck ass. It's going to be boring as all hell, but we're just going to throw running backs at
the best running games of the year.
Yeah, at the Rutgers defense. And it was kind of this ugly first quarter. And then the rest of the game was basically hit and giggle because Rutgers broke. They churned up a bunch of yardage, killed a lot of play clock, and won the game. They could have done that the week before against Minnesota. They could have done that with a few other teams. And they tried it against Iowa, and it didn't work well, but that was a different ball game because Iowa's a hell of a different defense. And plus, Iowa claps and doesn't get called for it. But anyway, it's the situation where I don't know if Scott's great at it. I think when he was at Oregon, you had so many resources around him in terms of guys that were solid offensive minds like Lubick and Helfrich. I'm not saying they're good head coaches. I'm saying good offensive minds. You got so many resources. You've got a plethora of athletes to deal with. You got a Heisman-winning quarterback. You had a pretty solid defense. Those are things, those are resources that make a coach look good. He goes to Central Florida. Again, you're in a conference where it's basically like it's like every team's running the old Mouse Davis run and shoot, for God's sakes. It's this incredibly wide open conference. It's NBA on turf, conference wide. Those are the kinds of situations that allow these wide open offenses to thrive. And again, I think from an athletic standpoint, he had some really good tools in the toolbox to work with at Central Florida. The other thing is, you look at the Griffin brothers, some of the other defensive players that he had at Central Florida, within the scope of an AAC school, you got two or three NFL guys on your defense, you're gonna keep the other team from scoring just enough. You will win lots of games. And that's what happened.
Yeah, well. So, I mean, you mentioned Helfrich. Do you think Mark Helfrich could be a guy? He's 48 years old. He hasn't been coaching, I think, since he was with the Bears. Do you think he's a guy Scott Frost would bring in to be an offensive coordinator? Can you do that? Can you be the boss of your old boss?
Yeah, I've seen that work because a lot of these coaches, I think some of these guys have some really great relationships with each other. And I think in a lot of these systems, they don't view each other as boss or subordinate. I think they view themselves as, I work with this guy works with me. And if that works out, great. Again, I don't know if Helfrich is, I don't know if he's a guy whose style fits within this system. Okay. I mean, if you look at Ohio State's a little bit of a one-off because they might be in terms of the Big Ten. Ohio State's one of the least Big Ten-y teams in the Big Ten in terms of what they do offensively. You look at everybody else is running a pro-style passing offense with a really strong run game. That's what everybody's trying to do. Tight ends rule the Big Ten.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just, you look at that Michigan-Penn State game. That's classic Big Ten. Yeah. You look at Michigan State, what they're doing this year. You look at what has allowed Illinois to go from being just a disaster of an operation early in the year. That's what made that loss to them so painful. It's not the fact that they beat us. It's the fact that this absolute disaster cluster, you know what, of a team beat us. They've progressed over the course of the season. If you've watched Illinois play, it's not pretty. It's boring as all hell. But they line up and just try to hammer you. They've got that funky, stacked, unbalanced O-line where they don't even put in tight ends anymore. They put in three extra O-linemen. I mean, they're lining up with seven or eight O-linemen in a line with a quarterback and a tailback, sometimes a quarterback, fullback, and tailback. And you know the run's coming. You know it's going to be a zone blocking scheme. And they just hammer you with it play after play after play after play. And then if you stop them, they punt and hope their defense can kind of pin you deep with the punt and then their defense. And then at some point they're going to get it back. And they just keep hammering you, and that's how they do it. It's ugly. It's completely boring. It has zero imagination, but it kind of works in this conference, and that's what you've got to have.
Do you think Scott Frost changes his offensive philosophy?
I hope he brings in an offensive coordinator whose philosophy is we're going to line up and try and just absolutely hammer guys with the run game and then play a fairly basic pro-style passing offense. And Coach Frost, if you want to tweak it with some spread stuff periodically, let's put that into the package as well, too. Because if you look at, if you want a point of comparison, it's not like Tom Osborne was lining up and running power plays out of the power eye or running triple option out of the power eye every single play. By the time you got into even the early 90s, it was a zone blocking scheme up front. We ran power plays. We ran the trap game. We had an amazing play action pass package. And then we were running a handful of some spread stuff. It was hard to put a true label on that offense. Yeah. By the time you got 92, 93, by the time you were to 95 to 97, I had no idea of how to quantify or qualify that offense in terms of like putting a name on it. I mean, it was just, I didn't know what do you want. It was Tom Osborne's offense. So it was basically, like I said, it was kind of a spread option for runners, the best way I could phrase it. So I don't think you have to have a really defined one other than I'd like to see a pro-style passing offense, much of like what you see at Wisconsin, Iowa, and Minnesota, coupled with a strong run game. And then, you know what, if Scott wants to do some different packages to tweak it periodically, let's do that.
So if you follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, you can at Doc Talk Sports, you would notice that he sent out a tweet earlier, responded to one where Scott said, maybe he doesn't need a special teams coordinator, and you weren't very happy about that.
Well, I'm not saying you got to have a special teams, a dedicated, all I do is I'm the special teams coach. I'm not saying that because we didn't have that when I played either, okay? What I want to see is an emphasis. I want to see expectations, and I want to see an emphasis. And those are two words I go back to often with special teams. If you've got that, then I think you're going to do well. I think I would love to see somebody with experience coaching kickers specifically, because the guys who coach kickers, they churn guys out. I mean, we had Dan Young. Dan Young, he was kind of our pass blocking coordinator for the O-line, and then he was the kickers coach.
Yeah.
He did a lot of – all the coaches took a part in special teams. Tony Samuel, George Darlington, Coach Young. It was a big group effort across all the assistants on special teams. Massive amount of effort and emphasis from each of those assistant coaches, though. All of them put a ton of effort into special teams, and the expectations on the players was high. If you didn't perform on special teams, you got to go ride pine. You didn't play. If you were somebody who is out there who is willing to bust their ass and be a really solid contributor on special teams, that was your gateway onto the field. I mean, there are some guys we had who played 90% of their plays on special teams and were game changers for us. But those were also the guys that it's crunch time, man, somebody just got hurt. We need to send in somebody else at linebacker, safety, fullback, running back. The guys that are willing to sell out and treat special teams, take it to heart, those were the guys who got playing time elsewhere because you knew they were definitely going to do it elsewhere if they're doing it on special teams. But the thing is we had a guy in Dan Young who coached kickers. He coached the punters. He coached the kickers. He could look at these guys and it's like, man, you're kind of consistently hooking it here. I mean, it's like that ball keeps drifting left. Here's what you got to do to fix that. Plant foot, do this. Do this with your hips. It'll fix that. He knew how to teach that. He knew how to coach that. He knew how to get those guys to perform. And Dan Young churned out NFL guys left and right. We put a number of kickers and punters into the NFL, all from Dan Young's teachings. So I'm not saying you got to have a dedicated special teams coordinator, but I want to see an emphasis on that within the coaching staff. And I would love to see him bring in somebody who coaches kickers.
So the big news this week, and it started with a tweet, but JoJo Doman said goodbye to the Nebraska football program because he had surgery and his injury is going to keep him out the rest of the year. How big of a loss is this for the defense in the next two games? As you grab another beer.
Sorry, I'm grabbing another beer. You want another one?
I will in a sec, yes.
Wuss. No, that's big. I mean, this is an NFL caliber guy, in my opinion. When you look at JoJo, he's one of these. I mean, by NFL standards, I don't know. Can you pull him? Do you have a computer?
Yeah, I do.
Pull him up. How big is JoJo Doman? Because I thought he was sort of like one of those like 6'2", 6'3", 215 guys.
Hold on.
Maybe 220.
According to the website, Huskers.com, he's 6'1", 230. So you can always take the program and subtract a half an inch to an inch and probably about 10 pounds. So you're about right.
I think they do a pretty good job trying to keep it consistent.
You know what I'm talking about, though.
Yeah. Although they listed me lighter than I ever was. Like my senior year, 6'5", 315. I'm like, okay, I'm 6'5". That was pretty legit. Well, then I was 6'5". Now I'm like 6'4" and an eighth. Anyway, but yeah, they had me listed as like a solid 15 pounds lighter than I actually did. They were scared to list 330 in a program back then.
He's a broadcasting major, though. That scares me a little bit. Don't go into broadcasting, man. There's no future in broadcasting. There's just no.
Damn.
Unless you want to come do the podcast. I mean, it's all digital.
Okay, because I went to. Okay, so I told her we took a visit to Grandview. Like, we walked through their facilities. They got a sweet broadcast.
And my,
their radio setup is awesome.
And it's actually not as good as it used to be. They actually moved buildings because, I mean, the world of broadcasting has changed so much. I mean, the fact that we can...
It's all online.
We can do this in my basement. And literally, if you were to walk into my basement and see the studio right now, you would think this is a legitimate radio studio.
Yeah.
I mean, you.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly what it looks like.
Yeah. But so it's crazy.
That's why our podcasts sound good.
Yeah. You know, some people tell you, no, it doesn't. You need to watch your gain here and level here. And I'm like, what?
Oh, for real?
Oh, some people bitch about the littlest things, right?
Yeah.
They're audio snobs, whatever.
Okay. So let's say we're going to say 6'1", 230. He can play outside linebacker in the NFL. That'll work. So. I mean, I'm thinking of guys I played with, and we haven't seen a sea change in defense on NFL defenses since the time I played in terms of kind of size, strength, et cetera, on the defensive side of the ball. Because I look at guys like I played against in college as well as the NFL. Derek Brooks, for example, is a great one. NFL Hall of Fame linebacker, Florida State guy. Derek... 6'1", maybe. I think they might have listed him at 6'2". He was probably about 6'1", 225, 230. Hall of Famer. And you know what? He's a guy in his prime. He'd be a Hall of Famer today. You put him back out there today as an outside linebacker. I just blanked. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Nebraska grad. He's Tampa.
David?
Yeah, Levante David. Levante David's like 6, maybe 6'1", 225 linebacker. So you don't need to have that monster size. And JoJo Doman's right out of that mold. I think he's a guy who's going to go play in the NFL. So huge loss. These last two games, that's a tough loss for this defense. Here's the other thing you got to think about. It sounds like... I'm losing track of my Gifford brothers here from Lincoln Southeast. Is it Isaac Gifford that's currently on the roster right now? Well, you got the computer. Look, yeah, Luke Gifford's with the Cowboys. Isaac's down in Lincoln. So you're replacing a guy who's basically a sixth-year senior with a redshirt freshman. That's a little bit of an experience jump there that you're losing. So that in and of itself is significant. I think Gifford's, from an athletic standpoint, might be one of the most athletic guys on the team. He's not very big. I will tell you that he's not a big linebacker. I mean, I think he played mostly safety at the high school level, but he's a big safety, small outside linebacker, crazy athleticism. I'm just telling you, it's hard to replace the experience that JoJo brings. And JoJo's a special player. I mean, when he was a freshman, when he was a sophomore, that's a guy who was making huge, huge plays back then. 3 years ago, JoJo was making plays. That's going to be tough to beat. I feel bad we're losing him. I don't fault him. The injury happened, my understanding is in the Purdue game. Played out the rest of the Purdue game, basically kind of sucked it up, bit the bullet, and played the Ohio State game as well. I think there's probably a point of diminishing returns, though, where A, he can maybe cause a little bit more damage by continuing to try to play. And I may be wrong on that account. I haven't talked to the orthopedic surgeons that I work with. Is this a type of injury that if you don't fix it, it's going to hamper you for a longer period of time? But I do think he had kind of hit a point where I think that was a concern. And then at the same time, too, he's got his NFL career ahead of him. So you can then ask the question, well, shouldn't he be out there to have Nebraska win these last two games? I think once they lost to Ohio State, the stakes changed.
Yeah, once you're not going to a bowl game.
Yeah. You don't, yeah, the stakes change tremendously. You got a guy who came back for an extra year of eligibility. It's not like this guy, it's not like you're saying like, oh, you can't stick around for these last two games. The guy stuck around for an extra year. And it was a bitch of a year at that. I mean, this was a tough year for these players in terms of expectations and what actually happened. And so I look at him and I'm going, okay, you know what? The smart thing to do for you right now, get this fixed. Don't damage that hand or wrist any more than it already is, and get it recovered so you can go do your NFL workouts and go set yourself and like three generations of your family up for life.
So if you don't follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, you should at Doc Talk Sports. We put out a poll earlier in the week after we did our little video podcast on Wednesday. If we did more live videos during the week, would you watch? And 55.2% say yes. 21.5% say sometimes. 6.4% say only breaking news. And 16.9% say nope. Well, for those of you who say no, screw you guys, all right? But so who knows? You know, I mean, to me, that's a good opportunity to maybe do, you know, interviews, some breaking news. We're not going to force it, but we just want you to know that there's a pretty good possibility that we might be doing some live video because, well, it's kind of fun to do that. If you have not given this podcast a like, a thumbs up, wherever you listen to it, whether that's on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, iHeart, Google Podcast, please give it a like or a thumbs up. If you have the time, feel free to give us a written review. We would really appreciate that because, well, you know, written reviews are always good. And the reason we ask you to do that is because the more people that like it, the more people that review it, that helps even more people find it. Please share this podcast with a friend if you don't think they've ever heard it before because, well, we want more people to listen. We want to thank the Remington Trophy. We want to thank Ticket Express. We want to thank Husker Hounds. And we want to thank Husker Max for sharing this. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. We will talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.